We've all heard the campaign promises throughout the years that if you only vote for this guy or gal, we'll soon be heading towards energy independence. No more worshiping at the altar of foreign oil. Not so fast, says my next guest. He's written a book called Gusher of Lies, The Dangerous Delusions of Energy Independence. Robert Bryce, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Faith.
Or as the New York Times likes to call you sometimes, Robert Bruce. Or Robert Boyce.
You know, it's always nice to be, you know, have your name in the New York Times. They just spelled it three different ways on one page, you know, and they got the name of the publisher wrong, which really got public affairs mad. But, you know, whatever. And they called me Visionary Faith. What am I going to say? You know.
Also called you a seal clubber or something, but we'll get to that.
Right.
Okay. So, Robert, are we all delusional when we vote for the candidate who says energy independence is possible?
Yes.
Why? It's not good news.
Well, but it's real. The reason I wrote this book was I was just mad, to be honest with you. I was mad at all the presidential candidates and Congress. You remember in December, Congress passed the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007.
Right.
Promising that this bill, the 300 pages, was going to bring us energy independence and energy security and whatever. It does nothing of the kind. President Bush signed it into law. Senator McCain, Senator Clinton, Senator Obama are all saying the same thing, which was we can be energy independent. They're all full of methane. It's not possible.
Okay.
And nor is it even desirable.
I want to get to all that. Let's first briefly lay out your book's in a few parts. And the first part is why we think we want energy independence. So everyone who's listening to this is saying, well, oil is at $110 a barrel. So, of course, we have to be energy independent or it'll make us safer. We won't have to be in the Middle East. What do you say to those people? These are the reasons we want energy independence.
Sure. Well, energy independence has a lot of appeal. And I think in the first part of the book, I quote James Carville, right, the Democratic strategist. And in October of 2006, he put out a memo to Democratic candidates around the country. And he said he talked about what Democrats, their message should be. And he singled out energy independence. And he said, because it is, and I'm quoting him, this is the one issue that gives people hope. And that's it. If you have a strategist who says, here's a two-word phrase that gives people hope, politicians are going to use it no matter what because it works. Well, why do voters think they want it? I think there are four reasons, and they're interconnected. And I think they're the second Iraq war, peak oil, global warming, and terrorism. I think they're, those four issues are kind of wrapped up in this angst, really, among people generally that they have about energy. And so this idea, if only we were energy independent, all those issues would magically disappear. It's just not true. Yes, all of them are hard issues, but energy independence is not the cure. We've been interdependent when it comes to energy with other countries for many years. We were a crude oil importer back in 1913, for instance.
I do want to point out, you mentioned Carville. It's not just Democrats who have been stumping for energy independence. It's appealed to both conservatives and liberals, right?
Absolutely. It's bipartisan ignorance.
Thomas Jefferson also warned about imported oil back in the day. And didn't Nixon?
He did.
Promise?
I didn't read that. Was that in the that was next to the Beatitudes in the Constitution from the earlier spot.
That's right.
About that. the Brattleboro, Vermont, and Beatitudes and gasoline. That was all part of the same thing.
So, all right, the third part of your book is entitled The Impossibility of Independence. Briefly explain, you were just saying that we've always been interdependent. Explain other reasons why you say the U.S. can't somehow work toward being energy self-sufficient.
Sure. Well, look, Faith, we're interdependent in virtually all of the commodities that we, use in our daily lives, whether it's iPods or fresh flowers or cell phones or sneakers, bottled water, beer. The modern economy is a global economy. In 2005, the U.S. imported crude oil from 41 countries. We imported gasoline from 46 and jet fuel from 26. We have been trading with the world in energy commodities in particular for a long time. The reason we shouldn't want this is because we want to get the commodities that we need at the best price. If we tried to produce all of these commodities here in the U.S., whether they're iPods or cell phones or gasoline, we'd pay a whole lot more for them. So why not buy them from the consumer, from the producers that are best able to produce them? That's been, you know, free markets and free people are, you know, that's been America's kind of, you know, outlook for years. And now suddenly we're embracing this crazy concept of energy independence.
But Robert, what if we didn't have to buy them? What if we could harness wind and solar and biofuels? And you know, Barack Obama sings the praises of coal.
Well, sure. But I mean, coal is not the cleanest of the fossil fuels. I think that's well known. Ethanol is the single biggest scam perpetrated on American taxpayers in modern history.
Why?
I'm all for wind and solar. I have solar panels on my house in Austin, Texas. Wind and solar are incurably intermittent. The sun doesn't shine at night, duh, and the wind doesn't blow all the time. So we need fossil fuel fired plants and nuclear powered plants to make sure we have electricity all the time. And that's what we want.
Explain why ethanol is a ruse, in your words.
Well, I use scam. I prefer scam.
Okay.
We can call it ruse if you like. Robbery. Look at the food prices lately. Why are food prices accelerating? It's because we're diverting so much of our corn to create motor fuel. This is fiscal insanity. We're making subsidized motor fuel out of the single most subsidized crop in America. That's corn. We're seeing these huge increases in grain prices across the board, corn, wheat, soybeans, you name it, because the ethanol distilleries are pulling in so much corn to make motor fuel. And they're doing it at a time when there's no shortage of motor fuel globally. We have enough gasoline. People don't like the price. That's fine. I understand that. But it's perverting our whole food system, and it's rippling throughout the entire world economy and sending up food prices around the world.
We have about a minute left before the break, and I just want to back up because I'm sure people are hearing this, and they're still thinking, yeah, but wouldn't it, even if we are importing oil from different parts of the world, wouldn't it be better if we were out of the Middle East? Wouldn't we be less of a slave to what goes on over there?
Well, look, I can't disagree with that point, but the point is, we've been in the Middle East for a long time. We're not going to completely abandon the Middle East. The problem is that we have embraced, in the Middle East, we've embraced militarism instead of markets. The Chinese are buying all the oil they need in the world market, and they don't have a single soldier in the Middle East. So, you know, what the thesis that I'm putting forward is, look, we've got our priorities kind of backward here. We need to be looking at the market because the market works. And that's that, I think, is the problem, is that when we look at ethanol or some of these other mandates that Congress has created and pushed into the market, it's driving up prices and it's having virtually no effect.
Robert, we need to take a break. But in a minute, I want to hear about why you think the U.S. should embrace the fact that we import oil. Also, Saturday Night Live comedian Jason Sudeikis. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. This is PRI's Fair Game. I'm Faith Saley. I'm speaking with writer Robert Rice about his new book, Gusher of Lies, The Dangerous Delusions of Energy Independence. Robert, you're fired up about this. Like, you know, people can hear that you're mad. Why does this make you mad?
Well, I just want, you know, maybe it's too much to expect, Faith, that politicians would level with us about energy. It's the single most important commodity in the economy. And I guess as I heard all these different politicians talking about this, saying, oh, if only we're energy independent, terrorism would go away. We'd solve global warming, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just not true. And I guess I, you know, after following the energy business for many years now, I'd like to have just a little bit of truth out of our politicians.
Are you making anyone mad with this book and what you're saying?
Well, I hope so.
Who do you want to make mad?
Well, I'd like to get the presidential candidates if I could make them mad and have them address this issue in a fair and honest way. Look, it's not just about oil. They're saying energy independent. Okay, well, we import electricity from Canada and Mexico. We import 83% of the uranium needed to fire our nuclear reactors. We import coal. We import natural gas. And we import 100% of about a dozen and a half different mineral commodities, things like yttrium and rare earth minerals that we need for our industry. So we're all wrapped up about energy. Well, what about all these other commodities? Shouldn't we be, you know, saying we're going to be yttrium independent as well?
What about increasing efficiency in vehicles and machinery that use energy? You know, that way, even if we're not independent, at least we're working toward reducing the amount of energy we use. What do you think
Sure.
of that?
Well, I think that's a good idea. I'm all for efficiency, and I'm for renewables. As I said, I have photovoltaic panels on my house. But we have to be careful about efficiency in that it's not necessarily going to reduce overall energy consumption. Efficiency, in fact, in many cases, can increase energy consumption, and that's counterintuitive, but the facts are well known on this, and the research really shows it very clearly. But energy efficiency does reduce the rate of growth of our energy consumption. One kind of, it sounds kind of like a joke, but I think it's true. Energy is like sex, horsepower, and bandwidth. The more we get, the more we want. And so consumption just goes up. And here in the U.S., it goes up in the developing world. And this is a commodity that, you know, people just can't get enough of. We find new ways to use it, whether it's in our homes and big screen TVs or flying to Hawaii on vacation, you name it.
We haven't talked about how dirty oil is. I mean, it emits lots of fossil fuels and leads to climate change, as best we know. What do you think about that?
Well, there's no question. There's no free lunch when we use energy. Coal is dirty. Wood is dirtier than coal. Oil is cleaner than coal. Natural gas is cleaner than oil. And one thing that I really don't understand in terms of the modern discussion here in the U.S. with regard to energy is why more people aren't advocating increased use of natural gas. A lot of people talk about Brazil and say, Brazil, it's a model for ethanol and renewable energy. Okay, fine. The U.S. produces more ethanol than Brazil, but that's another question. Brazil has 10 times more natural gas vehicles than the U.S., even though the U.S. has 10 times more motor vehicles than Brazil. It's crazy. We're mandating ethanol use, and yet we're ignoring a natural gas, a fossil fuel that emits half as much CO2 as coal, is relatively abundant domestically. We import 60% of our oil, but only 20% of our natural gas. So Congress, I think, is really missing a big opportunity here and saying, let's make use of more natural gas. But it's kind of the redheaded stepchild of the energy business.
Now, finally, here's something from the New York Times. The hard-nosed Mr. Bryce reveals himself in the end as something of a visionary and perhaps a revolutionary. And that's because you do have hope that eventually we'll discover a super battery, a revolutionary way to store energy. Is that really possible?
Well, it is possible. You know, how probable it is, I can't address. You know, inventors have been working on batteries for a long time. Thomas Edison spent years working on the battery. And spent $40 million in today's money of his own funds trying to improve the battery so that he could use it in delivery trucks and automobiles. He eventually gave up. He did improve the lead-acid battery and the alkaline battery. But what I write about in the book is that the real game changer in terms of in the energy sector is electricity storage. If we had a viable super battery, we could store the power that solar panels make during the day, and that the power that wind turbines make when the wind isn't blowing. So I say, let's create the super battery prize. Let's offer $1 billion to an inventor who can come up with a compact, affordable system that can store multiple kilowatt hours of electricity, and $10 billion for an inventor who can come up with a battery capable of storing multiple megawatt hours of electricity. That would be a huge, huge change in our overall energy system.
Robert, in the New York Times Review, it says, with all the gusto of a hunter clubbing baby seals, Mr. Bryce goes after one cherished green belief after another. Are you a baby seal clubber?
You know, I've just had to take a break to even come on here because I've been all day. I mean, my clothes are splattered with blood. I mean, it's a real mess.
Gosh, Robert.
It's not easy killing all the seals is hard work.
It sure is. And it takes a stone cold heart. So, Robert,
absolutely,
thanks for
taking...
Thank you for taking a break and coming to talk to us, and go wash your hands.
Thanks a lot, Faith.
Robert Bryce's new book, Gusher of Lies, is out now. You can find out more about him on our website, morefairgame.org.